Welcome to this week's edition of the Property Buyer and Sellers Podcast. I'm delighted to be able to present to you today the legendary Mr. Paul Shamblina. Many of you will have seen him on the telly, many programs including Nightmare Landlords and Slum Tenants or something similar. He's also the CCO of Hamilton Fraser and the founder of Landlord Action, amongst many other companies which we can talk about along the way. Paul, welcome. Thanks for coming on.
Thank you, Ben. Thank you for having me. Pleasure being here.
Well, it's good of you to come on because we know what an influential, important guy you are. The 15th most influential guy in property today, according to the Daily Telegraph.
Yeah, that was some time ago, actually.
You're probably up the rankings even further now.
I don't know, but yeah, it was a nice compliment. But yeah, I've been helping landlords and letting agents for 30 years now. Set Landlord Action up 20 years ago. Became a landlord after I set up Landlord Action. But yeah, no, I've still got the energy and the enthusiasm to be passionate to help landlords. Yeah. I think that's important. They're going through a really tough time at the moment.
And I think that's why you're so influential, because your passion and enthusiasm comes across on both on the screen and whenever we talk. It's clear that you're passionate about the industry, you're passionate about what you do, how you do it, and helping people in difficult situations, which I love. And actually, you and I spoke, you probably remember, probably about 20 years ago on one of my first cases when you were advising us there. So, yeah, I know.
Yeah, it was a long time. Yeah, you were one of my earliest clients. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, lots of things going on with the property industry right now. Can we just talk through some of the things that's significant to our landlords, particularly Section 21? I mean, this is the big fear of many landlords. Everyone's talking about it. It's coming. I know you're involved in the consultation of the changes. Can you give us an outline of how you see that rolling out?
Yeah, definitely. Look, Section 21 is going to be abolished. Be very clear about that. Yep. My prediction, it's going to be, I reckon, 18 months to 2 years, possibly. At the moment, the government are doing round-the-table workshops nationally. They're going all around the country. It will be one of the biggest changes in the private rental sector. It's part of the Renters Reform Bill, and there's a whole lot of other changes. I mean, some of those changes will be some of the biggest changes in 30 years in the private rental sector. I was involved in another paper, which was called Beyond Section 21. There's an organisation called the Lettings Industry Council, and Landlord Action were part of the commissioning of a paper with London School of Economics on the impact or the unintended consequence of abolishing Section 21 if you didn't have provisions in place. Albeit that working paper, and it's 70 pages long, and you can download it on the Lettings Industry Council's website, was prior to COVID. So let's be clear that there was a problem with the court system beforehand, overworked, under budget, lack of resource. Then COVID kicked in, and I think that's just multiplied it by 100 and seen how fractious it has been. And we know better than any about Landlord Action. You know, we're doing 1,300 to 1,500 cases a year. You know, we've got 17 staff at Landlord Action. Is you have to invest in the court system. You have to have more bailiffs. You have to reform and use high court enforcement officers. You have to strengthen the grounds of Section 8. At the moment, there's 17 grounds. I think it would go up to 22, 23 grounds. You also need to bring in mediation of some sort. They're really the provisions of place. The problem you will have is you don't get it right and landlords don't have confidence. And bearing in mind, we see what's happened at the moment and people have been stuck in the court system, whatever. The worry will be is that the smaller landlord, and I think it's quite apparent with regard to the government and so forth, is this a lot of the smaller landlords, bear in mind, and you're a sales agent in London, you've seen the market fly because obviously, the concessions of stamp duty. Those smaller landlords, and it is harder now more than ever to fully manage a property. You know, I've literally just launched a course, which I was asked 7-8 years ago to do, which is on my website, paulshamblina.tv. It's a £39 course. And basically the argument is self-manage or not to self-manage. Landlords, you need to think about using an agent more than ever because there's so much compliance. So, I think Section 21 is going to go. And I think that when the date comes in, you will see a lot of landlords serving those Section 21s. But the problem you've got is that there's other problems such as the vulnerable tenants, Ken, the lower part of the market, they might struggle to find property in the private rental sector. We have a social housing crisis, as you well know, but demand is still so, so strong. And then, of course, with regard to referencing, you're going to have a lot of issues with regard to tenants passing referencing, landlords being a lot more stringent, landlords want more guarantors. I mean, there's a whole lot of permutations that may happen.
Yeah, absolutely. And with regards to the Section 8 changes, the Ground 8 changes, do you think that they will be solid enough to give landlords confidence to move forward when Section 21 is removed? Because I think that's on the mind of a lot of landlords.
Yeah, it's a really good question, Ken. So at the moment, there's only two mandatory grounds out of 17. So, you know, a big issue is I want to move back into my property. I want to sell my property.
Yeah.
At the moment, landlords use Section 21 for that. You know, they don't use Ground 1. You know, I sat down on I'm on loads of working groups. I was on a working group called the Fair Possession Coalition. It sounded a bit like the mafia, but basically was sitting down with loads of landlord associations, and I put forward that not being able to gain access, which is a massive problem for landlords, should be a ground. You need to strengthen a lot of those grounds. They need to be more mandatory, and landlords need to have confidence because, you know, we've got something like, it's purported 2.5 million landlords out there. Believe it or not, 51% of landlords are 50 years and under, believe it or not, which 3 years ago, it was only 25%. So there has been a big growth in that. They need to strengthen the grounds. You need to have confidence in the court system. And again, another working group I was on, I remember I went up to Leeds in November 19, before pandemic, for the housing court consultation. I was on that. And obviously prior to COVID changed all of that. And we haven't even talked about, obviously, the courts being suspended and the backlogs and all that type of stuff. So you need to have major investment in the court system. And they were talking about housing courts, you know, having specialist specialist landlord and tenant judges, which in principle is great. But of course, COVID has changed everything.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, onto those delays and backlogs. What are they? I mean, where are we right now in terms of if a landlord's looking to gain possession, let's presume that they've served the extended notice of 4 or 6 months, whatever it was, under the ground. And then we're now applying.
Wait, do you like my cup? It's got my face on. not that I've got an ego, but one of my staff bought it. They bought it for me for my 50th. But anyway, sorry. You were asking a very serious question and I interrupted you, Ken. I apologize.
No problem, Paul. No problem.
So
in terms of like when you've served the notice, you've applied to courts. So I appreciate it's different depending on what borough you're in. But could you give us an overview? Because we know there are delays and backlogs. But could you give us an idea of how big those delays are in practice?
Well, that's a really good question. So basically, it was believed that there was 11 to 12,000 possession orders after the extension of the eviction ban was lifted, which ironically was on my birthday, the 31st of May, that they were waiting for court orders to be enforced by county court bailiffs. We have a shortage of county court bailiffs. There was 294 bailiffs in the last count of 170 courts. And trying to recruit a bailiff, I mean, what bailiff wants to go and work for 20k a year, being on the front line with obviously mental health issues, COVID and all that, and that they struggled.
Yeah,
I can tell you on the ground, because we are one of the biggest landlord and tenant lawyers out there, and we are a regulated firm of solicitors, and it's so important now that if you do have a problem with a tenant, and it's still a minority, you know, the default rate went up to about seven percent on rent arrears. They brought in a whole load of new provisions with regard to the courts, because what they didn't want to have, you know, the courts basically got suspended from April till September. Okay, then opened up. We were still issuing claims at landlord action, and of course, the court notice periods went up to 6 months, which was horrendous. I can tell you this from doing this for 30 years, rent arrears will be at an all time high. We've got numerous cases of landlords having 12 months or more rent arrears.
Sure.
You have tenants that have fallen hard time, and that's when we started a mediation business with the property redress scheme. Notice periods now, as they stand, are 4 months. Or if you've got 4 months more rent arrears, they're 4 weeks. We were getting lots more instructions on antisocial behaviour because there's no notice period, albeit they are discretionary games. We're getting loads more of those. But what the courts also brought in reactivation notices where you had to make the cases pre-COVID were the worst affected, Ken. So I had a lady, and I featured her on BBC London News, a lady called Liliana. She had she was due an eviction date. I think it was on the 8th of April 2020. She gets the letter to say the courts are suspended, And basically, and this was at Central London County Court, if I remember rightly, which is one of the busiest courts in London. We managed to evict the tenant on the 21st of April 2021. She was made homeless and she lost her job. So there's a lot of those small landlords that have really been affected. And of course, the government, and there was a lot of campaigning. We worked closely with the National Residential Landlord Association for tenant saver loans. Yeah. To come in, which is in Scotland and in Wales, where basically the monies are lent to the tenant but paid directly to the landlord. But the government said, you know what, we've got 6 million people on universal credit, we're not going to do that. But they are still doing that. But the problem you've got is debt councils like the CAB and various government organizations don't recommend tenant saver loans to tenants because it gets the tenants into bigger debt. But you know, paying your rent or paying your mortgage is your most important payment of the month.
Yeah. I mean, when the pandemic first hit, we had lots of calls from tenants saying our landlords are getting a mortgage holiday, therefore we want to.
Yeah, I know.
And actually, you know, when I had a conversation with them and said, look, actually, it's not a holiday, it's an extended loan.
It's a deferment, yeah.
Yeah, which they've got to pay back with interest. And, you know, surely you're now on furlough, you're getting 80% of your salary, you're not commuting, your rent should be one of your most important things that you're doing right now.
We had
such a good hit rate. I mean, we had ended up with one in difficulty, which I was amazed by. And it really
but that was a true. There was the shock factor, Ken.
Yeah.
I mean, I was getting, I mean, look, in the first lockdown, I mean, I struggled mentally. I'll admit it, in the first 4 to 6 weeks, because I go around everywhere. And, you know, I'm on a board of a company of 230 people, you know, and I help manage and oversee, you know, 8-10 different brands, which we talked about. But I struggled. But there was a lot of landlords and tenants that were reaching out to me, and I was giving some advice. I mean, always the commercial property market was always going to be affected much worse. I called that.
Oh, it's a bloodbath, isn't it?
It's an absolute bloodbath. I mean, and especially with the extensions that have been given in that marketplace. Yeah. But you were getting tenants that were taking advantage of the situation.
100%. You know, I had a client of mine that's on the commercial side of a very famous coffee brand. And he demanded his rent, as usual, in the quarter for 4 different coffee shops. And he got the invoice back in red pen right the way over it, not paying. That was it.
Really? And they were. I mean, I think, you know what, all due respect, I mean, again, you know how it is, Ken. I tell it how it is. I think commercial landlords have had it too good for too long, if you put your hands up to that.
And
obviously, you know, I don't forget, I used to be a bailiff in a former life. I used to be a certified bailiff before I set up Landlord Action. And you'd be getting, you know, if it was one day late, they'd be sitting in a, you know, they'd be putting a warrant of distress in.
Yeah.
And they'd be quite aggressive. I mean, I think it's in Canada or America, they charge rent as per turnover. I think they've done that. And I think it's been a big reflection. But I think it would open up a lot of resi opportunities as well, some in the high street under permitted development.
100%. Paul, I think it's very brave of you to mention mental health challenges, because I think a lot of people have faced these over the pandemic.
Yeah.
And not many people of your standing would stand up and say, actually, I've struggled with it. So
yeah.
You'll be really refreshed to hear that, to be honest.
No, I did struggle. It was a shock factor, not being able to go in the office, and, you know, I travelled all over the place.
Yeah.
And I'd literally just finished filming Series 6, which was on obviously last night, which they're now showing. And I thought, you know, I think the shock factor, I think part of it was, oh my God, I'm stuck in with my missus and my kids and my dog. I think that didn't help as well. And then I decided to build an extension during lockdown, which was a nightmare as well, but I won't even go into that.
Oh yeah, I could believe that. But can we talk about you, Paul? Because you've kind of, what was your background? How did you start this off? What kicked it off? Because I remember seeing you on TV saying that you weren't particularly educated. So,
no.
And yet here you are, one of the most significant people in property today. Can you tell us about your journey?
Yeah. So I was not academic at all. I was always a grafter. I was always entrepreneurial. I mean, I remember, you know, working in my dad had a hairdressing shop in Fulham. When I was 9 years old, sweeping up the hair. And then 13, I remember he had a whole load of sweatshirts. I went door to door knocking at 13 and selling sweatshirts. And then I worked in a burger. But I mean, I was always a grafter, always had that work ethic. And I actually couldn't wait to leave school. I mean, I couldn't concentrate. I got in a little bit of trouble at school, whatever, but nothing too serious. And then actually, the funny story is, I wanted to go into fast food management, believe it or not. and I didn't want to wear the uniform, so I didn't do it. And I was living in Brighton at the time. I was living there in Brighton, and I used to have a part-time job at the Grand Hotel as well. I used to do room service, and I used to work in a restaurant doing silver service, all that type of stuff. And then I ended up getting a job in a law firm as an outdoor clerk. And my starting salary, Ken, in 1987 was £4,200 a year, right? And I used to go to court, issue writs, and I did my first, I was always quite confident, and I did my first court hearing, albeit a very simple little debt recovery case, before a judge at 16 years old.
Wow.
And then I worked in the 89 recession, so I was doing house repossession. So, and obviously the interest rate, you'll remember, was about 15%. Really
I was
odd.
There. I was there.
I know. And I did, in one day, I think I did 12 or 14 hearings in one day once. Yeah. So I used to do all the hearings, agency hearings. And then I moved back. I was from London originally. I was from Kenton originally, near Wembley. And then I moved back to London when I was 18 in North London. And I worked in a law firm in Camden. And then I bought my first flat in Edgware at 22 or 23 or whatever. But I was all, and then I became a private investigator, a bailiff, started my own business. And then I sold that. But I'd always done evictions for landlords. I issued my first possession claim in 1991. So my background was legal, and then it went into law. And then with Landlord Action, I started that with my former partner, God rest his soul, he's passed away now, Johnny. And I evicted 30 illegal immigrants for him in a three-bedroom flat in Edgware. And we had an office in the same office block. And he said, that's really... And out of that, we came out with Landlord Action because solicitors were charging too much money and complicating it. So we did three steps and fixed fees, and we were the first people. And then really what put us on the map, we'd been trading for 3 months. And Mira Bar Halal from the Evening Standard, she saw one of our brochures. We sent 10,000 brochures out, me and him, just sticking down envelopes or whatever. And she wrote this article. I posted it on LinkedIn just recently, a blessing for landlords. And we had over 10 to 15,000 calls from it.
And you know, I actually remember that. And you know, I've watched you grow through the years in terms of your status and the size of your company.
Not my height, though, unfortunately, Ken.
Well, we can't claim that.
It is my waistline,
But, you know, in terms of your media profile, you're 10 feet tall, my friend. You really are. And it's great to see. And I really do think you are the landlord's champion. And, you know, if you need someone to look after your landlord issues, then Paul is your man. Paul, can you tell us about, like, what would you say is, like, the proportion? Because I think a lot of people ask me the proportion of the mickey takers versus the genuine sad evictions for genuine reasons such as
I like to mix things up. Did you mean mickey takers or piss takers? You know what, there's a break. You know, look, let's be serious. COVID, everyone got affected by COVID, so you know, and that's why, you know, they brought in loads of different provisions. You know, when you rent out, and you'll know this with your agency, when you rent out a tenancy and the tenant's part of the referencing and so forth, you know, a couple live together and month four they have an argument, one leaves, one goes, or a guy loses his job. You can't foresee that that's going to happen. I mean, obviously, getting rent guarantee insurance is obviously a good provision to have, to be able to pay to that.
Yeah.
And I think that makes sense. So the problem is, a lot of it's down to information. If you've got a good agent finding out and good communication, yes, you can try and mediate and do a deal. But there comes to a point where the tenant can't afford to be there. Bearing in mind, you know, you're in for courts now. The courts, yes, they have backlogs and they are getting back to normal, hopefully. It's really hard. I mean, the worst tenants to get, Ken, are serial bad tenants who you know have done it before, that prey on vulnerable, naive, self-managed landlords, albeit they've done it for ages. I mean, a big problem that you've got in London, and I remember doing an interview in 2014, I can't remember, with Richard Quest on CNN when Airbnb came to London. And I said to him, I said, great, but it will be abused, and you'll see landlords that will be stung by this. And I've seen it. I mean, I've been involved in some quite high level cases that have been run by subletting gangs. It's big business. Yeah. Easy to sublet a property, rent the rooms out, and you've got the issue with licensing. I mean, there's a whole load of stuff, but there, you know. So I think it's a mixture, and it's really hard to say. Yeah, oh, 80% are mickey taking tenants, but I think it's hard. But the worst type of tenants are serial bad tenants, But there is one. There's one issue that the government didn't think about when I had the government in my office. When you ban Section 21, you'll get a lot of tenants, and I know we've done this for you in the past, Ken, where a tenant says they want to be rehoused by the council on a Section 21, so they stay put.
Yeah, the old story.
So they're told by the council to stay put, which is ridiculous. And don't forget, you know, housing waiting lists in London's and boroughs. I've got 10, 15, 20, 25,000 people waiting, you know. And it takes 15 years to get a council house on the waiting list. I mean, it's just, you know, we're at crisis point. That's why the PRS has taken over. But one unintended consequence is if you abolish Section 21, you know, a lot of landlords have used Section 21 for rent arrears, okay? Yeah. When you go down the Section 21 route, it doesn't show rent arrears and the money order. If you go down the rent arrears route, it says the money order. So if a tenant gets evicted and he owes 5 grand of rent arrears because he hasn't paid for whatever reason, and he tries to go to the council in Croydon to try and be rehoused, they may tell him, say, well, hold on, you owe 5 grand rent arrears. You made yourself homeless. We can't rehouse you. So there is going to be a knock-on effect, but people haven't really thought about that.
Yeah, I think people haven't thought about a lot of things. The other thing is I think there's a real unintended consequence of scaring the small landlord away because many of these people now, as you know, Paul, sitting on quite large paper profits and they can be very easily nudged in either direction. You know, I've got landlords that are literally on the fence right now feeling punished over the last few years in terms of the way the slant of towards the tenant has been. I'm wondering whether they should continue in the sector. Can you give us your thoughts on what you see going forward for the small landlord, given build to rent and everything that's coming?
Well, yeah, I mean, build to rent still needs more traction. We do quite a lot of work with build to rent. And actually, a lot of landlords don't realise that build to rent is actually a big threat for them in competition. Because statistically, I mean, there's been, there's a company, there's a Homeview, which is a website that does reviews on build to rent operators. You know, the type of tenant has changed now. You know, the customer journey and what they expect, the expectancies got higher. Yeah. A lot of landlords have been, dare I say it, have been just been complacent. They've been complacent and they think that they can get those returns that they got 10, 15 years ago or 5 years ago. But the game's changed in the last 3 years, 2 years, and obviously the pandemic and stuff. Yeah. You know, if you think about, look, the direct payment that was made in 2008, the law that came in on housing benefit, that was one of the worst laws that came into effect. Universal credit. I mean, I was the first one to break a story. I think it was Sebastian O'Kelly on the Daily Mail about that, the Mail on Sunday. You've also got Section 24, the mortgage interest relief, which has hit a lot of landlords. You've also got the changes with regard to the big changes now with the renters reform bill, so the abolishment of Section 21. They're looking at maybe amending short-term tenancy, so a bit like in Scotland. You know, you're talking about landlord redress that's going to come in. I mean, we know about that bit, owning the property redress scheme. Landlord registration, that's going to come in. We're going to become more like Scotland, more like Wales. The government want landlords to become much more professional. And if you can't treat it or being professional, well, then most probably you're in the wrong industry. But actually, long term, it can pay. But of course, profits have dwindled. And that's why I've done that course about, you know, self-manage or not to self-manage. Because the hardest thing to make your property work is the management. I mean, you know, to speak to some landlords and I say, you know, do you want to take a call from your tenant at 4 a.m. that he's drunk and he's lost his keys? Not in a million years, you know, or that the plumb, you know, the boiler's broken down. And there's a false economy because, you know, agents charge a let only and a full management fee, but the difference is small if you divide it by 12 months. So, yeah, I promote that a lot of landlords should be using agents. But, yeah, my prediction is you'll see a lot more of the smaller landlords wanting to cash in. I think I've had enough. But I think you'll also see a lot of people that want to get back in. There's a lot of institutional investment now. I mean, you know, you've got Lloyds Bank and you've got John Lewis coming into the game, you know, developing a lot of sites and going down the build to rent room. But a tenant will pay more for on site amenities, you know, like 24-hour surveillance and yoga rooms and we workspaces and stuff. And you just got to go to Wembley. You know, there's some big build to rent operators down there, and I know they've got some in Croydon as well, and you know, if a tenant will pay an extra 50-100 quid a month, they've got access to that. And you can't be complacent, and you are 100% right that there are a lot of landlords on the fence, and you will have landlords in an agency saying, I want to sell. But at least if they want to sell, make sure you get the sale instruction, naturally.
Absolutely. And it's really good to know that you've done the course, Paul. I think that's really important. I'll tell you why. For years now, and especially in times of a rising market, you'll know that there are many sharks out there that charge tens of thousands of pounds for property courses, which are basically nothing more than total bullshit. You know that.
I know that. And actually, I charge 39 quid for my courses, an hour and a half course. And I'm very, very conscious of that. I mean, I've been doing property education for years. I mean, you know, I've been like my media. I think my first talk I did to landlords was in 2001, just when I did my first TV program in 2001. So, yeah, I educate and I present in a different type of style, in the sense that I tell it how it is. Yeah. I try and make landlords and letting agents. I train letting agents. I actually train letting agents on how to attract new landlords to your business. I go into an agency. I look at their offering. I see what their pitch is. I see what their marketing strategy is. So I act for both, actually. But, yeah, the information's on the website, paulchamplina.tv.
Yeah, I think that's great. And, you know, if you want a course that's not designed to get more money or just extract money from you, I'd highly recommend it, because
Paulie, it's a no bullshit course.
Yeah, absolutely. You shoot from the hip. And I love that, because I do too. And sometimes you lose people over that, but that's okay, because actually, in the broader sense, you've been true to yourself and others. And that's what I think is great about you, Paul, honestly. So thank you so much for your time today.
It's really enjoyable.
It's been lovely. I'd love to have you back on in a year or so's time to see what's going on then. And if you have the time to hook up with us again, it would be great.
Yeah, definitely. Pleasure. And keep safe, everyone. Thank you.
Yeah. Thanks very much for listening, everybody. That's it for this week's edition. We look forward to another edition next week with you. Take care. Stay safe and well.